Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Recorded during the Dolphins-Panthers Monday Night Football game, it's time to Belichick your premises. And if you know a friend who could use his or her, because we don't discriminate based on gender here, premises checked, invite them over. Tell them about our show. Joining me this trip, again, mixing metaphors because I'm so used to the main show, Daniel T. Richards. How are you doing this week, Daniel?
I'm doing swell. It is a busy week for me because of work, but that doesn't mean that I didn't have time to sit back and relax and watch a boatload of football with all that Jerry Jones talk. So much hot Jerry Jones talk, Justin. And you know why it's such hot Jerry Jones talk? Because it's Goodell Schadenfreude. It just makes my day.
That makes more sense because I was a little confused as to why you were saying hot and Jerry Jones like multiple times in the same sentence.
It's because he's bringing the wrath of Jones upon Goodell, and it couldn't be more delicious. Couldn't be more delicious. Have you followed any of this? Do you know what the hell is going on with Roger Goodell?
I have no idea what's going on. I just have one question to ask you. Is Ezekiel Elliott suspended this week or not? It seems every week he's suspended, and then the next week he's not suspended.
Hold on, let me check the wheel of Elliott, and we'll just spin it here and see. And he is suspended. Yes, he is suspended this week.
It's like somebody was like, okay, the Ray Rice thing was ridiculous. Deflategate was ridiculous. How could we one-up those? What if we combine them? And did a story that featured elements of both. This is like a pro wrestling story.
Yeah, it is a little bit like that kind of storyline. You just have to keep upping the ante to make the ridiculousness more more entertaining. So he is suspended. He was suspended in this last game, which is partially why I think the Cowboys got annihilated by the Falcons. So it's so this Goodell stuff. So it started off with a simple contract extension. Jones basically wanting there to be more discussions about Goodell's contract and the owners sort of pushing back. And so then Jerry Jones threatened to sue the owners if they didn't postpone the contract extension talks. And so then suddenly yesterday, Goodell's contract requests get leaked to the media. Mm-hmm. And it turns out Goodell insane.
Shocking.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, I wonder who leaked Goodell's contract request. So I'm going to give you a little peek here into the life of Roger Goodell, football commissioner.
Wait. Over under 50 million.
Ooh. Are you want to guess?
I'm going to guess it's over 50 million.
You would be wrong, but your 50 million instinct was basically spot on. Because it's $49.5 million annually is what he wants.
Yeah, they set that as their high mark.
Yeah.
That's what they did. Yeah.
So
I understand you, Roger. That's how simplistic of a man you are, Roger Goodell.
I want $50 million. Yeah. But that's not that, like, the juicy parts are more like the fact that he has demanded a use of a private plane for the rest of his life.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Like, when he's not employed?
Yep.
Is that a thing I can ask for in negotiations for a job?
Apparently it is. And
even after I leave this job, I want all the resources of the job at my disposal. I can do that.
And he's also asking for health insurance for his entire family for life, for their life. So he wants $50 million a year.
I don't understand.
Use of a private plane forever and health insurance for his entire family forever. Yeah.
America, this is what we have created. This is why the Patriots took him to court. Do you not see this as a man who thinks he can do anything?
Yes. Yes. So this was leaked. Now owners are pissed off that this was leaked because it's not supposed to be public information. And so apparently there's a report now going.
Wait, how many owners are pissed off? There can't be that many irrational owners.
So it's
there's got to be a few who are pissed and then a bunch who are like, yeah, that's funny.
It's interesting because this is being made out. It's a bunch of anonymous sources everywhere. And so it's hard to say what is actually factual and what is just farce at this point. Sorry, wrong show. But
check the main show, though, for a discussion of the issues with anonymity that are presented in this story.
Yeah. So there's a couple reports. One of them is that there's basically now a civil war among owners, those of whom are supporting Jerry Jones and those who are supporting Goodell. And it's unclear which way this is going to go. But the owners who are supporting...
Which side is Robert Downey Jr. and which side is Chris Evans?
Oh, yeah. Worst Marvel movie ever. Goodell, Jones, Civil War. That'd be over quick, that fight. But...
Well, if Ezekiel Elliott's as much of a wife beater or a woman beater, he'd beat up Goodell easily.
Yeah. So, of course, the reasons that some of the owners are supporting Jones are exactly what you talked about, which is they think that Goodell has gone too far in his punishments, that he's too dictatorial, too unpredictable, and basically runs the entire NFL as if he is the emperor of the NFL, not the commissioner of a league. They don't like that. On the other hand...
Wait, what gave it away? What gave it away? Was it him wanting health insurance and a plane for life?
I think that might have been a clue if they didn't know already. Now, the owners who are supporting Goodell are basically saying, like, yeah, Goodell can do whatever the fuck he wants because the NFL has made a gajillion dollars during his tenure. And so whatever he's doing is working. It doesn't matter what it is. So that's the two sides. And now there's actually a report that some of these owners who are fighting off Jerry Jones are trying to convince Goodell to basically hit the nuclear option. Which apparently there's something in the NFL charter or whatever that says that an owner can be forced to sell their team if the commissioner and a majority of owners basically declare that they have done something that detrimentally affects the league forever or something like that. Some stupid, vague, you know, more generally more aware than not kind of term.
Can we use that on Colin Kaepernick?
Yes, that's right. Oh, here's the language. Has been or is guilty of conduct detrimental to the welfare of the league or professional football. The commissioner can basically impose a sanction of $500,000, or if that is not adequate or sufficient, the commissioner may refer the issue to the NFL's executive committee, which has the power to compel cancellation or forfeiture of the franchise in the league or any member club involved or implicated. Basically making Jerry Jones sell the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, yeah, that's similar to what happened with Donald Sterling and the Clippers.
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
if for anyone out there who's not a basketball fan, he said something racist. It arguably actually wasn't even racist, right? I don't remember the context.
It was racial.
But was it just racial, right? Did he even use the N-word? I don't remember.
I don't remember, but it wasn't that bad.
He was... Yeah. It was weird. It was crazy. But because he has a lot of black players and stuff, they said he was racist and they made him sell the team. And one of the guys from Microsoft bought it.
Yeah. So just think about this for a moment. Do you really think the NFL would find it in its interest to force Jerry Jones to sell the Dallas Cowboys? How insane of a thought is that?
Well, this is literally the people who are surviving off of the backs of a successful person turning on that successful person. I mean, what is the most profitable franchise in the NFL?
Yeah.
The Dallas Cowboys. So you're going to fire the guy who made all that money for all of you?
Yeah. The article here says that when he took over the ownership in 1989, the franchise was losing $1 million a month. And now the franchise is valued at well over $4 billion, which is incredible.
Yeah, he's Robert Kraft before Robert Kraft.
Yeah, totally. So it's a weird situation going on here in the NFL. I will just say simply that from a fan perspective, the commissioner of football should be a lot less visible than Roger Goodell is. Just purely from thinking about what you would want out of a commissioner of a sport, it would be ideal if I didn't even know his name. It'd be ideal if I had to go look him up. Like, oh yeah, who is the commissioner of the NFL? Like, he needs to be a much smaller role, and I don't think Goodell, as a personality, is ever going to take on that kind of role as a commissioner. He's always going to be overactive, over-involved. He's going to want to be dictatorial. And just from that perspective as a fan, I think it's completely not worth it to keep him on. I don't think the success of the NFL has anything to do with Roger Goodell. It has to do with the franchises, better marketing, better ownership involvement, etc. Goodell has just been, from a fan perspective, a complete and utter failure and a headache. So,
you literally just described Vince McMahon's heel villain persona in the Attitude Era of WWE when he feuded with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah,
I did. Literally exactly what you just said. That's how ridiculous this is.
So, and it's not, I hope now that people see that it's not just a Deflategate thing. Like, he's fucked up every single thing he's touched in regards to player punishment and negotiations and being proactive about concussions and whatever. He's fucked up everything he's touched. Why does he deserve anything?
Let's talk to Ray Rice.
Yeah.
About fucking things up.
Yeah.
Look, you shouldn't like hit someone and drag them out of the elevator like that, but he got hit first.
Yeah.
And he lost his career over it.
Right. It's again, where
it's just,
yeah, whatever. The commissioner needs to go. Long live the commissioner. That's what I have to say.
You were never going to get rid of him. He's going to have a fucking plane and health insurance. You can't even kill him. He's going to be like, oh, and by the way, I also need bodyguards. Emperor Trump? We don't worry about Emperor Goodell.
That's right. He wrote in the contract immortality, and then someone told him that's not possible, so he settled for health insurance for life for his family.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So so the $49.5 million is only a $19.5 million increase from what he makes currently. He makes about $30 million a year. So crazy amounts of money. He's made about $200 million off the NFL at this point. So
it's very obvious he's just living off of this. He's living off of the success of others.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
And he's literally doing everything he can just to keep himself in power. That's all he's doing. His entire job is to keep himself secure. He's not doing anything for the benefit of the league.
Yeah. Justin, who's the commissioner of hockey?
Who's the champion of hockey?
I thought you liked hockey.
Sorry, Ronnie. No, I'm being facetious. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins. No, I have no idea who the commissioner of hockey
Good.
Is.
Who's the commissioner of basketball?
I could name a commissioner of basketball from the 90s. If that helps.
Nope. Good. That's how it should be. Fuck Goodell. Fuck Goodell.
Vince McMahon is the answer.
Speaking of people who we should tell to fuck off, wasn't your favorite person named like Citizen of the Year or some shit by some crappy magazine?
Crappy magazine? GQ is a crappy magazine?
I don't know. Certainly crappy reporting if he's the Citizen of the Year.
Yeah, I don't even know how GQ could name a Citizen of the Year, and I don't know how Colin Kaepernick could be the Citizen of the Year. Like, isn't there somebody who's done something actually good in the world?
Yeah, any firefighter who saved a kitten from a tree.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Anyone?
Can we just talk about Pat Tillman some more?
Any intern who's ran and got their boss coffee unsolicited.
I think Monica Lewinsky as intern is a better citizen than she did more to service this country.
Yes, she did. Zing. I don't get the Colin Kaepernick obsession. We've talked about it sort of endlessly on this show. I just wanted to piss you off a little bit and hear a little ranting. But
well, and he's dressed like a Black Panther on the cover.
How dare you? That's racist.
How dare me? I don't care if the Panthers are playing right now.
Why do you know it's a Black Panther, though, Justin? He could be dressed just as a regular Panther. I mean, come on. Why do you have to bring race into this? I don't understand.
I mean, there was no soundtrack of dinnit, 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 so I assumed he was black and not pink. I'm sorry.
It's true. It's true. Your musical genius knows no bounds. You with impressions and singing are just, man, you're like a double not threat whatsoever. Yeah.
You're a tell.
You want to actually talk some football? Would that make us feel better? Actually talk football?
Well, I mean, it would make me feel pretty good because we won in Denver pretty big, and that never happens.
It's true. Denver has been Tom Brady's nemesis for quite a while. He actually has a losing record in Denver, if you include the postseason, which is no bueno. But this time came up big, scored a big 41 points on the Denver defense, which is not looking as Denver-y as it has since 2015.
Oh, man. Did you just see that interception Cam Newton threw?
No, I did not, but I'm sure they'll show a replay here. It looks like it might not have been caught, technically.
Yeah, they better overturn that. That was less of a catch than Gronkowski's no touchdown.
That's right. So, yeah, great
performance. I just realized, though, this game is going to be the stupid interception game because it's Cam Newton versus Jay Cutler.
It's true. It's true. Maybe they should take a page out of Drew Brees' book and just stop throwing touchdown passes altogether and still score 47 points.
Yeah, that's legitimately terrifying.
Isn't it, though?
That's like I'm going to wake up like having shit the bed. That's so terrifying. Like, the idea of the Saints scoring touchdowns without Drew Brees throwing touchdowns? Yeah. Like, are you kidding
me? Yeah, Drew Brees' offense is our backup weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly.
And after they got rid of Adrian Peterson.
Right. Suddenly the NFC is a little scarier.
Nah, just the Saints.
Yeah.
Name one other scary team. I mean, I guess the Rams are good, but he's too young, you know?
Yeah, the Rams are good. They're just untested, really. It's the second half of their schedule here that's actually hard. So, you know, all praise be to Sean McVay for turning that team around. They have more wins already than they did all of last season, so plus there, but let's see what they do down the stretch.
Right. It's like I've said before, you can only play the teams on your schedule. So I don't want to say this like they're untested thing. No, they beat seven teams and only lost the two. Like, they're tested, but, you know, we'll see what happens over the rest of the schedule.
I guess what I mean by untested in general is that they're a young team with not a lot of playoff experience. That's actually what I mean.
Right. Right.
By untested.
And I agree completely. That's the major question. That's what I tell people. People always think I'm a genius. Like, some guy said it to me today. I forget what it was about, but it was about a specific game or team. And I was like, yeah, you know, I always say, is the quarterback proven under pressure? Can he prove he wins under pressure? And then the guy comes back and the quarterback is lost because he couldn't handle the pressure. And they're like, yeah, you're really smart. How did you know that? I'm like, I didn't know that. Just statistically, these people don't succeed under pressure.
Right.
Like, if they all succeeded under pressure, we'd have multiple time Super Bowl winning quarterbacks, and we don't. So that's how they have to prove themselves.
And what was the stat they gave last night, by the way, to back up that point? I think this is what it was, but fans out there can double check me, which is 16 of the last 32 Super Bowls have featured the Pats and the Broncos.
That's a bullshit statistic.
Why?
Because they were like, oh, the Patriots have been in most of the Super Bowls, and then here's a team that's been in two. Like,
No, 16 of the last 32.
Uh-huh. And how many of those are the Patriots?
Of the last 32?
Eight?
Seven?
Oh, no, more than that. Where does 32 go back to?
Well, 32 years, right? I don't know. So they've been in seven.
So do the math.
Right?
Well, does it go back all the way to 86?
I don't know. Probably. I can't do math.
If it goes back to 86, we're going to get reamed in the comments, but if it goes back to 86, the Patriots have been in nine Super Bowls. And I mean, I guess if that counts too, then they did the, how many did the Broncos win with Elway?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Two?
Yeah, I thought they won two. Yeah. I don't know. You talk and I'll Google.
Yeah. So the point is that these teams have both been consistent over a long period of time, partially because of the consistency of their the strength of their quarterback position. I found that fascinating that the past 32, half of them have featured the Patriots or the Broncos, which is interesting.
So they won two with Elway and one with Manning. Yeah. So they've been to the Super Bowl, let's see, Okay.
30.
I take it back.
What? Yeah.
I apologize. Well, I didn't know that they won in 86, 87, and 89. They won the AFC. So that's what they're talking about. That's why they go back 32 years. Yeah. So I apologize, Broncos fans out there. I'm sorry. Don't ever say I never admitted I was wrong or sorry.
But then if you add, by the way, if you add like Ben Roethlisberger into that mix, it's something incredible. You know, the number of Super Bowls that have featured either Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger is just
Yeah, because since 85, the Broncos have won 8 AFC championships. The Patriots have won 9.
Yeah.
So that's 17, like you were saying. And then the Steelers have won a bunch, too, because they played a couple times in the 90s, and they've played a few times with Roethlisberger as well.
Yeah. So the consistency at quarterback is so important, and these untested QBs look phenomenal in the regular season and then end up falling apart in the postseason.
I would also like to say, though, it's also consistency in ownership and management. I mean, it's not a surprise the Rooneys have owned the Steelers for that long.
Right.
When we're talking about the Patriots, that's all but one of them was when Robert Kraft was involved. And John Elway has been one of the major pieces of that Broncos organization.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So the Patriots 7-2 now. Looks like we've shaked off this early defensive rut that they were in. Shaked off a rut. Talk about a terrible mixture of metaphors. Man, I'm an English major.
Would it be shook off a rut?
Yes, shook off a rut. That's right. It's one of these things where there's this cliche in the Patriots community of trust in Belichick, trust in Belichick. But there's something now that's more, that means more to me, I think, every year. And it's not just that I have this undying sort of godlike trust in Belichick. It's that there are a few other coaches who make adjustments like him throughout the season, put together a team piece by piece, and understand that it's a marathon, not a sprint, to use another sports metaphor.
Wait, I'm confused as to why you think this is a cliche.
Well,
is it because you started watching the Patriots much later than I did?
I think so. And it's also mostly because I don't ever see anyone analyze, like, what would Belichick actually do to fix the defense? It's all just, oh, he'll just, you know, Belichick will just, like, wave his Belichick wand and fix the defense because he's,
but
yeah. Go ahead.
Isn't that the more rational point of view? Isn't it refreshing that in society there's actually some place where people are like, oh, yeah, the expert will figure it out. I'm not going to try to pretend I'm the expert.
I guess I'm just wary of the falling into the sports fan thing of like, I don't understand how any of this works, but this guy does this magic and then this thing happens. I don't like that. It's like, oh, you know, Roethlisberger will figure a way to get it down the field. It's like, well, okay. I
don't know. But it's not really magic, and we've talked about it on here before. He hasn't changed anything. It's the bend, not break, clock killing defense that's built around a D line that doesn't necessarily get sacks, but it stops the run. He builds it around stopping the run, and then he has a strong secondary with a smart safety back there.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to figure out.
And can we talk a little bit? We've talked a little bit about time management before and how other teams are bad at it, but let's talk for a moment how tremendous...
Thanks for that yes and there.
Yeah, yes and. Moving on. Let's talk a little bit about how good the Patriots are at clock management. One of the things that was pointed out in the game last night is the Patriots have scored in, I think, 7 of the 9 games they've played. They've scored before the second half 7 times this season. And they do a lot of that, what you call the 2-minute drill. Maybe everyone calls it the 2-minute drill. You're just the only one I ever hear
everyone
say it.
Everyone calls it the 2-minute drill.
Well, yeah, you're the only one I hear say it, which is interesting. But
maybe it's an old thing that people don't say anymore, but it's definitely a thing.
And they did it again in this game. And they did it in a way that was, I call it the Tom Brady yawn offense, where the announcers are screaming like, they only have a minute and 40, they only have a minute and 30, they only have a minute and 20, and Tom Brady is like casually strutting over to the line, you know, sipping a latte, turning around, scratching his butt, like He's just doing everything but hurrying up because he knows exactly how much time he needs in order to get the ball into the end zone. It's an amazing thing to watch as everyone else panics, really.
Well, yeah. How long was left on the clock? How much was left on the clock when they got the ball back?
A little over 2 minutes.
At the end of the first. It was a little over two minutes? Okay. So a little over 2 minutes, they had one timeout. One timeout.
Yes.
And they drove and scored a touchdown. And it's like you were talking about, it was incredible. I mentioned this to you in our halftime call. The fact that they actually huddled up at a certain point because they wanted to make sure time ran off so the Broncos didn't get the ball back.
Right.
Like, other teams are struggling to preserve time. Like, have you seen Philip Rivers in the last 2 minutes of a half?
Yes. The man looks like Beaker from the fucking Muppets. He's just, meep, 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 and his arms are flailing around. He doesn't know what to do. He's just frantically throwing, hoping someone will catch something. Yeah.
That's a good one. I was going to say Kramer from Seinfeld.
Yeah, a lot like that.
He just keeps like sliding in and opening the door, and he doesn't know why he came in, and everyone's like, why are you here? And then he says the N-word for some reason, and half the team walks off the field.
That was my favorite episode of Seinfeld. Yeah. Yeah. The Kramer's a secret racist episode.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's so bad at it. Then you watch Tom Brady, and he's so good at it that it's, like, next level that they literally have to waste time in the two-minute drill.
Yes, that's the part I want to emphasize in its entirety, is other teams execute a two-minute drill in 50 seconds, and then they allow the other team too much time to score. The Patriots don't do that. The Patriots execute a two-minute drill in 2 minutes. The end.
That's generous to say they actually execute the two-minute drill.
Well, like,
most teams let 2 minutes run out.
What was the team? It was the Texans against the Seahawks. Like, needed to march down the field and score, and there was like 3 minutes left or something. And they did it so fast that they gave Russell Wilson like a minute and something and gave him enough time to come back and win. It was like, you need to kill the time. You don't need to just get down there and score. That's important. You need to do it in a way that doesn't allow your opponent to retaliate. So that's what I mean.
Right. And this is right. This is three things, basically. You know, I've mentioned clock killing defense before, but it's clock killing offense. It's the idea that it's not about just how many points you score. It's how many points you score and how much time.
Yes.
You know, defense Belichick will say, if we give up 3 points, but it takes them 6 minutes, that's a win for us. Totally. It's the same thing in the situation in offense, which is number two, situational football. You know, we need a touchdown to get ahead, go in the second half. So if we score in a minute 40, they're not going to score with 20 seconds left.
Right. Might you describe,
and the third thing is,
in a humorous way, Belichick's entire philosophy of football as play as little of it as possible?
Did you just ask me to make a joke on the spot that I'm not prepared for?
I'm just saying, like, every time we sum up Belichick's philosophy of, like, defense, offense, it's just destroy as much time of the clock as possible. So basically, like, he just doesn't want to play football.
Yeah, but isn't that the, like, that's the joke about all, like, inventors? All inventors are really just lazy people who are looking for an easier way to do things.
Belichick loves football, but he's just super unmotivated to play it, so he had to find a way to make the game as short as possible.
It's not really that. Belichick's just the biggest dick in the world. Belichick's just, Belichick is looking for the way to make sure you play as little football as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's totally.
So you look, you think you're winning, right? This is how much of a mindfuck it is. You think you're winning? You're like, oh man, we're really driving the ball here. We're really dominating this Patriots defense. They're giving up so many yards. And then you kick a field goal, and at the end of the game, you're like, wait, we only scored 17 points, but we drove the ball so well. We really were better than the Patriots. It's like, no. You don't even understand how you just got mind-fucked. And this is because, this is the number three thing, the level of experience they're at. This comes from the Super Bowl, where they lost to the Giants because they scored too quickly. And then left all the time on the clock for Eli Manning to come back and score again. They learned that lesson, and they were like, shit. I mean, that's how they beat the Falcons in the Super Bowl. It was just experience.
Right, exactly. And I actually said this to you jokingly, I think, last night during the game, which was, if you are the Patriots' opponent, and you see that there's 2 minutes left on the clock, and the Patriots have the ball, at some point, don't you just have to make the decision, like, I'm just going to let Deion Lewis break a run and score right now so that I have a minute 50 to try to come back? Because otherwise you're just going to get boned.
Yeah, at a certain point, depending on what yardage they're at. Didn't that happen to the second Patriots-Giants Super Bowl where they let, I can't remember the running back's name, but they let him fall into the end zone to have time to try and score. They didn't. They lost the game, but that was, Belichick did exactly what you said.
Yeah. It's just, if you know the Patriots are just going to march down the field but eat up 2.5 minutes doing it, just some point, just let Gillis Lee run all the way to the end zone. Like, in fact, chase him down and push him into the end zone. Like, do everything you can to give yourself enough time to try to come back and score. It's funny, when I was sitting on the plane coming back from Houston, a conference, and I was watching the game, Patriots-Texans with a Houston's fan, and the Texans went down and scored and left Tom Brady a minute something on the clock. The Houston's fan goes, "Oh, it's over. Pats won." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Oh, they left way too much time. It's over." And I was like, "Do you want to watch the rest of the game?" He's like, "No, it's over. It's fine." So, my point being, just let him score!
Right, there's an obvious middle ground here where you try and stop them up to a certain yard line, and then once they get to your, like, 40 or 35, then you let them score when they're in field goal range or whatever.
Yeah. Be an interesting strategy. I'd like to see that enacted, so... I don't know. I'm excited about football coming up. I'm less excited about Goodell still being the commissioner. Had to bring that back up. Only one team left in all football winless, Justin.
Of course it's the Cleveland Browns. It's the Browns. That's how fucking terrible the Giants are that they lost to the 49ers.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Poor Eli Manning. What will he do? What do you do with a guy like Eli Manning, or as Adam Kroll says, a guy like Phil Rivers, who's, you know, good, but just not good enough to actually win shit? Like, that's like the worst situation you could be in. If your quarterback is completely shitty, it's a very clear decision. Get rid of him, whatever, trade him, anything. But if they're like just good enough that they sometimes almost win, it's a more difficult decision. You'd rather have the certainty that they suck, right?
Yeah, but it's a lot of that has to do with who's available, what are the option moves that are available, you know, how does that get you in the draft, all that kind of salary cap hit. There's a lot that goes into that. This is why GMs are paid a lot of money. I think that's a whole other discussion for another day. The only thing I'll say is Eli actually has won a couple of Super Bowls, whereas Philip Rivers hasn't won shit. So,
what have you done for me lately, though? Last bit of tidbit before I wrap it up here. Which quarterback in the league has the most 60-plus yard passes?
Oh, you told me this, so it's not fair that I spoil it, but...
It's Jacoby Brissett. That's right, the Brissett of Indianapolis has the most 60-plus yard passes. Can you believe that? We were just fucking stacked at quarterback in the Patriots to start the year. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's what Belichick said, is that we had the best situation in the league, and it was just unsustainable.
Yeah.
And so I love when Belichick's just like, you people are stupid. Like, in that press conference, he was like, what do you want from me? You want me to keep 3 starting caliber quarterbacks on my bench? Like,
yeah, you're the Patriots. Wave your Belichick wand. Succeed. That's right.
Yeah, wave your Belichick wand and make human psychology work differently.
That's right. But not in front of women, even if you ask them. Don't wave at them.
Yeah. Wow, a Louis C.K. reference. So if you want to hear more about that Louis C.K. situation that Daniel just talked about, you can check out our main show. That's if you're already on iTunes, that's in the feed. It's the Louis C.K. edition. Just check it out. You can also find it on themidside.com, where we have our entire podcast archives, themidside.com/podcast. And Daniel, where can people reach you?
You can reach me on Instagram at Daniel T. Richards, or you can reach me on Twitter at Daniel T. Richards, or you can reach me on Facebook at DT Richards. Why? Because fuck internet and anonymity. Easy for me to say.
That's also on the most recent episode. I am not anonymous, but I am under the podcast accounts, The Midside, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. If you check out Instagram, I've been doing a lot more stories lately on a bunch of different stuff, like movies, just life in general. I have up there right now the unboxing of the Funko Justice League box. So there's a lot of cool stuff you can check out on all of our social media. Thanks for checking in with us this week. For now, we're on to the Oakland Raiders in Mexico.
My face, your face, instant face, go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.